Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. You can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Kim Hoddis about her book, Beyond Grief: How a Son's Afterlife Connection Transformed a Mother's Loss into a Remarkable Spiritual Journey. Kim Hoddis is a motivational speaker, best-selling author, award-winning entrepreneur, and spiritual mentor. After losing her son Rob to an accidental overdose, she began having conversations with her son from the other side. Well, hi Kim, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I am so happy to be here and just excited to share more of this transformational experience I've had. So thank you for inviting me to join you.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Beyond Grief: How a Son's Afterlife Connection Transformed a Mother's Loss into a Remarkable Spiritual Journey. That's about your son, as said in the title, but could you tell us about your daughter, Chelsea?
Yes, I'd love to start there because that's really where this all started. I was 30 years old. I had four children under the age of five. Chelsea had not quite turned two, and we found out that she had leukemia. And of course, we were hopeful because at that time, childhood leukemia had, even back then, had a 95% cure rate, but she didn't have childhood leukemia. She had monosomy 7. And so she fought the fight for 6 months, but my husband and I, held her in our arms on the night of May 21st, 31 years ago, when she took her last breath. And my friends had all called me Mary Poppins. I mean, if you look at my bio now, I'm a motivational speaker on the subject of happiness. And the reason I started researching happiness was because of this experience with Chelsea, because I was so devastated. My friends had called me Mary Poppins. I'd always been very positive, but I just was devastated as a young mother with, now three other kids that were also young. And so I started to research happiness, and that was part of what brought me back. But I had a profound transformational experience because Chelsea kept sending me white rocks. And if you could see behind my desk, I have this beautiful painting of white rocks. And everywhere I went, I would find white rocks. And I didn't know what they meant. I just knew that they were coming from her, and she had a message for me. And so I was in church one Sunday. We had a guest pastor. She was speaking on the story of David and Goliath. And she said, most people, are familiar with this story, and they understand that Goliath represents those huge things in our lives, those huge obstacles that might seem that they can't be overcome, because nobody thought anybody could overcome Goliath. He was the giant. And then David, which represents that underdog spirit. But what nobody talks about are the smooth white stones that David used to slay Goliath. And I knew in that moment that it wasn't that pastor talking on that Sunday morning for that congregation. I knew it was Chelsea talking to me through her. And she said, those white stones represent our ability to slay any giant, overcome any obstacle, and create a life that we love. And I knew it was Chelsea saying to me, Mom, you've got to go create a life you love. You've got to step out of all this sadness and sorrow, and you've got to work through your grief and go create a life that makes you happy. And it was really the turning point for me when I began to realize, okay, this has happened, and now what am I going to do with it? And that's when I really began to focus on happiness, which, ultimately became my whole career. And I didn't know it at the time. Rob has shared with me since, and it is in the book, how, this was the setup 30 years ago. I needed to experience the loss of a child back then, so I could be in this place now. I work with grieving moms now, and for most of them, well, actually for all of the moms that I've worked with, this is the loss of the first time they've lost a child. And I know, had I not had that experience with Chelsea 30 years ago, that I wouldn't have been able to hold the space with Rob that I was. And so, you know, he has explained to me how we all came in with this karmic agreement. It was all part of our soul contract. And so that's a beautiful place for us to begin, because that was really where the story began over 30 years ago.
So it's a case then that Chelsea's soul agreed to play this part in your life before you guys were born.
Absolutely. Yep.
And that it was part of the plan to get you into where you are now. And it's almost like that soul really kind of sacrificed themselves for you to get you to this point.
Yeah, except the beautiful thing is, I don't think Chelsea would classify it as a sacrifice. I mean, she has shared with me that she loves the high dive. You know, she liked coming in, shaking things up. She completely shook up all of our lives. You know, we literally lived in a cul-de-sac with a white picket fence. I mean, I had this perfect little life with my four little babies. And, you know, then everything just blew up. And, you know, of course, it didn't feel like in a good way at the time. But looking back, I can see the beauty of it all and how it was all orchestrated for my benefit, for her benefit. You know, she came what she came to do. She'd like to come in and do a short little life and then pop out. So it wasn't even, I wouldn't even classify it as a sacrifice on her part. It was her soul contract. It was her joy. You know, we all come down here and do, Rob has no regrets about the life he lived. He knows that he came and did exactly what he needed to do to be in the space to, you know, make the changes on the planet he's making now with sharing this incredible information in his book.
Do you have any information on having lives with Chelsea before?
I do not. I don't. Well, that's actually not true. So I did a past life regression with a friend of mine who was getting trained, and she had to do like 30 of them before she could get certified. And I went to a lifetime where I was like an Indian woman. And I've never shared this story with anybody, Simon.
Oh,
I guess it's going to be out now. But I'd never really thought of the connection there. So thank you for bringing it to my consciousness. And so I went to a lifetime where Chelsea was in my life. And it's funny because our nickname for her was Chi-Chi. And that was her Indian name, was Chi-Chi. And I didn't put all this together because I was really kind of out through the whole process. But when I processed it afterwards with my friend who was leading the past life regression, it was kind of the same thing. In that lifetime, Chelsea was also taken young when there was a raid by soldiers, and she was killed. And so actually I do have a memory of a lifetime before Chelsea, so we're with Chelsea.
So can we get on to Rob then? What happened with him?
Oh my goodness. Rob, he was just a bright light. He was fun. He was an incredible athlete. He went to the state championship in tennis his junior and senior year in high school. He went on to play college tennis. After he graduated, he was the lead stringer for the Arkansas Razorback men's and women's tennis teams. He had a little tennis program up on top of Mount Sequoia, which is this beautiful little community center that is right near the University of Arkansas. He had a pest control business. He just lived life fully. He was also an addict, and he did the work. That boy did not want to be an addict. He did everything in his power to try to overcome it when he was in a body. And he got clean, and he was clean the last 2 years of his life. And then, as far as we know, it was one of the first times he had used drugs since getting clean, and he was sold fentanyl, not heroin. And so when he took the fentanyl, which he thought was heroin, it killed him immediately. He started coming through to some friends of mine, but one of my very best friends was psychic, which never really mattered to me. I knew she had that gift, but I had never asked her to do anything psychically. It was long after Chelsea left. You know, I didn't, I just knew she had that gift, but it just wasn't part of our relationship. She was one of Rob's pest control clients. So he saw her, you know, monthly, and she and I were good friends and we would walk. So she went through the whole when Rob was actively using and when he was not doing well. You know, she heard all the stories about that. And of course, all the victories about when he was doing well. And so he went to her as soon as, you know, we found out that he had died. And started communicating with her and just gave her so many beautiful messages. And sometimes she was calling me twice a day. She would be like, Kim, I'm so sorry to bother you. I'm like, no, keep bothering me, please. I want to hear anything Rob has to say. And just delivering these, you know, beautiful messages and, you know, giving me comfort and, you know, how he was still with us and still there. And, you know, just telling me everything that I needed to hear to just even make it through in those horrible, you know, first days after his death. And it was about a month that Eve, you know, had been getting these messages and continually relaying them to me. And one day I was, you know, if I'm honest, I was kind of having a little pity party for myself. And I said, you know, Eve, I really appreciate this. This is great. Thank you so much. But you know, I'm kind of pissed. You're the one who's getting to talk to him. I want to talk to him. I want to talk to him directly. I don't want to have to go through you. And she said, Kim, open your computer tomorrow and he'll be there. And again, I don't know if that was her magic or if it was Rob making sure I heard the words from somebody who I admired and respected to believe it enough to do it. So that next morning, I have this big, it's an orange polka dot chair. I know it sounds horrible, but it's a beautiful, classy chair. But I have this orange polka dot chair that was Rob's. And that's where, you know, I would do my morning meditations and my journaling. And so I sat down and I usually would journal in a journal, handwrite, but it was like, get out your computer. So I got on my computer and I just typed, Rob, I was told if I showed up, you would too, you'd be here. And man, it was like a force took over my hands and they started flying across the keyboard. And it was like, Mamacita, that was Rob's nickname for Mamacita, you made it. You're here. Yay. I've got so much to tell you. And he just started and the boy has not shut up since.
There wasn't there something there? He said, was it you've had to learn to tie shoes first of all?
Yeah. So for his celebration of life, I was looking for pictures and I was going through all this stuff and I found this little tiny video clip. There was a photo of it. And then I found a little tiny video clip and it was my husband trying to show him how to tie shoes. And then there's a picture of him sitting there on the floor, you know, with Bob trying to help him tie his shoes. And, he referenced that. He said, you remember how you helped. So this was before I had connected with him. This was one of the messages he gave Eve, which of course at the time didn't make sense to me. But, you know, he said, you remember that picture of Dad trying to help me learn to tie my shoes? That's the same way connecting with me is going to be. I'm going to teach you how to connect. So just like you taught me how to tie your shoes, I'm going to teach you how to communicate and connect with me in spirit. And at the time, you know, I was just in so much grief. I couldn't think straight. I was just numb. And so it didn't until I had, so I kept the conversation where Eve told me that I would record the conversations when she would call to give me messages. And so then, you know, a year later when Rob and I'd been connecting for a year and he had, you know, it had kind of shifted from his personal messages of hope and healing to me to kind of a broader audience. I mean, I had already published 4 books, so he knows I'm an author, you know, so he said, okay, Mom, I'm going to start sharing stuff with you that I want everybody to know. This isn't just for you and I connecting. This is, you know, for everyone. And so when I went back and started listening to those conversations again, I was blown away because I didn't remember that at the time Eve shared it with me. But when I went back and read it, I'm like, oh my gosh, Rob was telling me, I'm going to teach you how to connect, Mom. You know, this, you're going to know. So it was cool to see how he knew all of this well before I had any idea of what was coming.
What is your process there? What did you do? Is it that you really had to still your mind and almost go into another space before it would happen? Or does it just happen?
Yes, I did get into a meditative state because I have a love-hate relationship with meditation. I'd be lying if I said I look forward to it and I'm any good at it. But for 30 years, I've been dabbling in it. You know, I can go 3 weeks without meditating, and then I can go 3 weeks meditating, and then I can go, 8 weeks without it in 2 days. And, you know, so I'm not consistent, but I have for years and years had it in my consciousness and my awareness. And so I do need to settle, because I have a very active mind. I'm very type A. So it is important that I get in a different space. I'm also a huge proponent of flower essences and gym essences. So, and I've taken those for years just, to help calm me, regulate, just give me some, extra love and juju. And so I do that every morning anyways. So, there were certain things that I kind of did. And after Rob and I had been communicating for about a year, he came through with I don't know what else to call it except a waking dream. It's like, all I can say is he was there with me. I don't know how any of this happens, because I'm not a psychic. I'm not a medium. I'm not a channel. I just happen to have this really beautiful connection with my son. But when, when he comes through to me, I just kind of got in that space. I'd never really had an experience like this before. But I just knew from what Eve had said, I just really felt if I sat down and I opened that, he would be there. So we'd been communicating for about a year when I had this waking dream. And I don't know what else to call it. It was so real. It's like he was there with me. And so one of the things in this waking dream, the next morning I got up and I was like, I had stuff going on. My daughter was here. And then I went back in the bedroom and I didn't remember it, but every morning I would go open my blinds and I had a picture of Rob on my dresser and I'd bop him on the nose and say, "Good morning, Rob." So I go in, I bop him on the nose. I say, "Good morning, Rob." And all of a sudden I remembered the dream. I had totally not remembered it. I literally just crumpled to the ground sobbing, because it was like, I realized I had been with my boy last night. And I was overwhelmed with emotion for 2 days. I couldn't even talk without bawling, because it was so profound. So I go running out to the living room. I get in my special spot. I open my computer and I'm like, "Rob, this was incredible. What's this all about?" And he said, "Well, Mom, I came back because I'm not going back into a body right now. I'm going to stay on this side and I'm going to teach you to help others connect with their loved ones who are in spirit." And I was like, "Oh, hell no." I'm like, "Rob, I'm not doing it. Number one, I have a very public profile. I mean, I'm a motivational speaker. I stand up on stages and I'm like, I'm not going to be the one who says, 'Oh, hire me to inspire your people and I can talk to my dead son.' I'm like, 'Rob, I'm just not doing it.'" And he's like, "Yeah, Mom, you are. You agreed to this. You've just forgotten. We all... you, Chelsea, and I, we all agreed to this before we incarnated this lifetime. This is part of your work to do." And I was just, it took him 10 days, and a bunch of the journal entries are in the book, because I was just like, "Rob, I'm not qualified. I don't know how to do this. I'm not a psychic. I'm not a channel. This just happened. It's just our sweet connection." And he said, "Mom, I am meeting so many souls over here, and especially when they transition before their parents, their mom is the first person they want to talk to." So he said, "We'll start with moms. How's that?" He's like, "And I speak a lot to women. So, he's like, those are your people. You'll be comfortable. We'll start with moms. They're going to be the easiest, because obviously as women, we carry our children's DNA in our bodies until we die. I mean, our children literally are a part of us." And so he said, "That's where we'll start." And I was just like, "Rob, I'm just not sure." And then the thing he said that really got me, he goes, "Mom, you talk all the time about the other side of the veil, crossing the veil or across the veil." He said, I'm meeting all these souls over here who are banging on the veil to get their mother's attention, sending what signs they can, but banging on the veil saying, I'm here. And he goes, but mom, how much noise does it make when you bang on a veil? Their moms just can't hear them. So I'm going to find the souls up here. You're going to find the mamas down there, and we're going to bring them together. And he said, I will give you the system. I'll teach you everything you need to know to teach them. And so I finally relented. And it took him about 8-9 months. And he just step by step gave me this incredible process, which is called Oscar. I'm like, I wanted it to be called bliss or love or heart. And he's like, nope, it's Oscar. We got to lighten this up. This is going to be really deep for these women. And we got to bring some levity to it. So the process is called Oscar. I'm like, I'm at this point, I've learned enough to just let Rob drive the bus. So the process is called Oscar, and it's beautiful.
And how can people find out about Oscar?
I love that. How can they find out about Oscar? They can go to my website, which is kimhotis.com/messages for moms.
So when the messages first started coming through, did you have any difficulty in trusting it? Or did you kind of feel like, am I just making this up myself?
Of course I did. Yes. My daddy was a traditional minister. He was in the pulpit 2 weeks before he passed. I mean, I grew up in a very traditional church, and I still have a very, very strong faith. It's just expanded. I mean, I've come to realize the God that I believe in is so big that anything is possible. So yes, of course this is possible. So when Rob first started coming through to me, you know, I didn't, you know, first it was like, gosh, am I just in so much grief that I'm imagining this? I knew that first day it was him. There was no doubt. And then it just became there. You could feel a different energy in the room. I could feel a different energy come in when Rob was there, and I could feel a different energy when he went out. But I think that's the biggest trick, because our culture doesn't honor these types of experiences. There are a lot of cultures where it's very normal to talk to people in spirit. But in our Western culture, sometimes it's seen as taboo or not real. And so I did doubt myself. And, you know, now it's beyond a shadow of a doubt. I know exactly when Rob's there. I know exactly, you know, that the information's coming from him. But in the beginning, yes. And one of the things I teach in the class, all the messages we get, we write down, we record. And I do that because what finally convinced me that this wasn't me was because when information would come through, my hands were just flying. It wasn't like I was consciously thinking. I didn't stop and correct typos or grammar or anything. I mean, I would just let whatever, you know, was coming through from Rob come through. And sometimes I would go months without even going back and looking at it. And so when these, when we write them down, we can go back and look at them. And when I would go back and read them, it's like, I was shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh, well, I know that wasn't me, because I've never thought that. I've never considered that. I've never believed that. I've never known that. This can't be me, because I've never ever thought this thought before. So it didn't come out of my brain. So it had to be coming from someplace outside of me. So I think that's very common. And that's the biggest hurdle I have to jump with the mamas that I'm helping, is they doubt. And, you know, in the book, Rob talks about, he was at his celebration of life. He was at his funeral, and he was down. And my friend who's psychic was sharing this with me. You know, he was just down in front of each of us as we went up to the pulpit to speak. I spoke and all of his siblings spoke. And she said, he was just like, I'm right here. You guys, I'm right here. I'm right here. And, you know, so they're there, they're ready. And, you know, I'll talk to these mamas and they'll go, oh, I saw this and this and this, but I'm just not sure it's him. I don't know if that's me. And I just want to be like Rob and put my hands out wide and go, they're right there. It's them. Believe them. Believe them. They're there.
Do you feel when you're doing this, you're sitting there typing, that other people can come through?
No, I'm from what I know and have experienced personally, and what the process Rob has taught me, it's not mediumship. It's not psychic. It's just connections with the ones that you love and know personally. I don't doubt. I mean, I've watched so many gifted mediums and psychics. I don't have that ability, and that's not what I teach. This is just right now for moms. I mean, I know he said, you know, this will work for everybody, but I'm just not in the place yet where I can, you know, I have had to say to Rob, he's like, there's more books, there's more courses. I'm like, buddy, you got to stop, man. I'm still over here on the earth plane in a body, and I can only take so much. So we're just going to stick with this for right now. But one of the biggest challenges I have, you know, with moms is the doubt, and is it real? And, you know, yes, and it's not for reaching out. You know, it's not for giving other people readings. It's not for, you know, it's not for anything else. It's just right now for moms connecting with their children. And I know for that, this system works.
So he started to talk to you about karma, reincarnation, and soul families. Was this a bit of a shock in a way because of your upbringing, your faith?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've all heard about karma. You know, I think everybody's heard that phrase, karma's a bitch. You know, things will come around to bite you. I haven't always, but I remember when Shirley MacLaine's book, Out on a Limb, came out, and my daddy, who was a traditional pastor, you know, and he was also very liberal. You know, he was also a broad thinker. And I remember sharing that with him, thinking, oh, he's going to roll his eyes at this. And he didn't. He said, yeah, I believe in reincarnation. I believe we have many lives. I was like, oh, wow, Dad, that's pretty progressive. The soul family things, you know, I mean, I had heard of that too, that we have our soul family and our family of origin, you know, which is why sometimes when you meet a friend, they feel even closer to you than your sister, you know, that those things happen. So I was familiar with those concepts, but the take that he put on it just made it more concrete for me. And one of the things that I hadn't really thought about that was super cool. So the guy that sold him the drugs that killed him, his name in the book is Nathan. I've changed his real name. But he, you know, Rob talked in that at the end of the book, and he talks about how Nathan is as significant and important a part as our soul family as his little brother was. And Rob and his little brother, they lived together. There was a 9-year age difference, but they were best friends. They were so tight. And, you know, he said, in another lifetime, Nathan was my brother. He's a part of our soul family. He had to live a horrible life, and Nathan had a horrible life, you know, to be in the point where he could hand me those drugs, which were what took me out. And he said, you have to love him the same way you loved me, the same way you loved Jordan, the same way you love Lindsay and Allie and Chelsea. You know, he's part of our soul family. So we have to love him and be grateful to him for stepping into that space in our soul family, you know, to hold that energy, because he had to make a lot of sacrifices this lifetime, living a very difficult, you know, childhood to be in that place as a grown man who's a drug dealer. And that kind of took me off guard. And I have to tell you, I have not reached out to Nathan yet. I know I will. Rob has said, you need to connect with him. You need to give that mama love to him, just like you gave it to me. And I believe all that. And I'm giving myself grace. And when I'm ready, that will happen.
Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? In my new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, I share 30 incredible stories of people who were clinically dead, some with no heartbeat, no brain activity, yet returned with knowledge that was later verified. These accounts challenge everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. It's available now as an ebook, paperback, and audiobook on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other good bookshops. Again, it's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, and I hope you check it out. Because I think he says something like, Nathan loved him enough to be the bad guy, but he also said we've all played the role of the bad guy during one life or another.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, that also really opened my eyes because, you know, even though my daddy was a pastor, I have one Bible verse memorized, and that is, judge not, lest ye be judged. And to me, that's to real. And I guess one other thing that he said that really did shift my perspective is that we have to remember that Nathan's soul needed that too for his growth. You know, we all agree to certain experiences before we incarnate. We all pick them, and we pick them because they're what we need for our own soul's evolution. And you look at somebody who had the childhood Nathan did, who had the life experiences he did, and you think, oh my gosh, how tragic, what a horrible existence. But it wasn't. It was what he needed this lifetime for his soul to grow. And Rob shared, this is another thing I had never heard of, is that, you know, he said, if we think every lifetime we evolve, but he said sometimes very evolved souls go back and have a very base lifetime because their soul needs that understanding to move to the next level. And he said, Nathan's actually a very evolved soul. He came back this lifetime to play this role because it was what his soul needed. So when we see people going through horrible stuff, obviously we can have compassion and love for them, but don't judge because it's what their soul chose this incarnation to move forward. And, you know, I have found with Rob's death that I can either use that experience to define me and destroy me, or I can use that experience to make the world better, to make my life better. I am opening and growing and loving deeper in ways that I don't think would be possible had I not had this experience with Rob. So I can let that experience ruin my life, or I can let it expand my life. And I want Rob's life to count for something, to be even bigger. I don't want it to be, oh, you know, here's another kid that died of drugs, part of the opioid epidemic, just another number. No, I want to make sense of this. I want to use it to help myself and to help humanity in any way I can.
I think he says something in the book that everything that happens happens for us and not to us. And so it's like saying, no matter what you experience, it's for us. It's like it's helping us in some way.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Even those things that just seem, you know, horrible and tragic. And I know we've all, you know, of course, I work in the motivational space as a motivational speaker, and we've all heard the stories of people that have endured, you know, horrible hardships and awful things. And then they come out on the other side and they use those experiences to just bring beauty and grace. And that's what I, you know, to me, I think that's what Rob is saying, that everything that happens is for our soul's evolution, is for our growth, is for our good. I mean, and I'm sure you're probably getting to this, probably one of your next questions, because he says it 5 or 6 times in the book, and I took it out. I had it in there 5 or 10. My editor was like, Kim, you're beating a dead horse with this. But, you know, when he says there's only good, it's all good. Everything's good. All there is love. Love is all there is. And everything is good. And, you know, at one point I was like, well, Rob, what about, you know, when horrible things happen, sex trafficking and, you know, abuse and murder? And he said, but Mom, where there's hurt, where there's anger, where there's, you know, damage, people send so much more love. It creates so much more love. He said, think about like the Ukraine and the outpouring of love that has gone to the people of the Ukraine and the help and the assistance. And so when something that's difficult or painful or awful happens, it often generates even more love. And that's what he means when he says, you know, there's everything ultimately comes back to love. It all comes back to love. It all comes back to it's all good. It's all beautiful. It's all right. Even when it doesn't feel that way, it's creating even more love and compassion and goodness on our planet.
Could you tell us what happened when you were on your Italian bike trip? Because there's something nasty that happened there, but it was actually positive in a way.
Yeah. So the story started. So Rob died February 2nd. We had to go clean out his apartment on February 28th. We waited until the very last day of the month. We put it off as long as we could. And afterwards, I went over to my friend Eve's house, the one who has the psychic abilities. And we're sitting in our hot tub, and I'm a mess. It's a horrible experience to know that you are touching for the very last time things that your child touched. You're taking off the wall pictures that he hung. I mean, it was an awful day. And so we're sitting there. I'm drinking whiskey. She's just listening to me. And we're sitting there. We've been in the hot tub maybe 45 minutes, and we hear this crash. I mean, it was just, it was like, oh my gosh, what has happened? She's like, stay here. I'll go see. We thought there must have been a car accident on the road in front of her. She comes back around the corner, and she just looks shell-shocked. And she's like, did you forget to put your car in park? And I'm like, well, no, I don't think so. Of course, I'm a mess, but I'm like, if you didn't put your car in park, wouldn't it have rolled down the hill right then? And I'm like, what is going on? And she said, Kim, your car just slid down the driveway and is stopped in that big tree. She had one tree in her front yard, and her house sits up on a hill. It slid down into this tree. Down the hill on the other side of the road is a house. And if that car had kept going, it would have probably been going 80 miles an hour into that house. It stops, and the only tree gets crammed in this tree. And there's a picture of it in the book. And so we go out and we're like, what is going on? And Eve goes, Kim, Rob did it. And I'm like, what the hell, Rob? I'm like, God, what are you doing to me? You know, at this point, I wasn't connecting with him. And Eve was like, he just says you have to trust him. There's a reason for this. And it took my car, because of this was in 2022, because of supply chain issues, it took them 6 months to get my car fixed. And I had to drive. So Rob had just gotten a new truck. It wasn't brand new, but it was new to him, a new truck. And we gave Jordan, his little brother, his truck. And then I took Jordan's old Xterra, which was the car we bought him in high school, which was just this crappy car. You couldn't take it over 60 miles an hour. Your teeth would rattle. It was so loud that I couldn't even talk on my phone when I was in it. And that's what I had to drive for 6 months. So fast forward a year and a half, and we are in Italy biking across country. And we went with my brother and sister-in-law. And so Donna would be in the lead. Then it would be me, then Bob, and then Bert, her husband, at the back. Well, I had never been to Italy, but there's like narrow roads and there's no shoulder, and the people drive like crazy. You know, it's like every time before they'd come around a corner, they're just honking their horn, I guess letting people know they're coming, but they're still flying around the corner, you know, way faster than they need to be. And so it is pouring rain the whole week. It is pouring rain. So we ride a couple of days in this horrible rain. And it was an agroturismo tour. So you would go to a little villa that had a few rooms, and they would feed you all farm to table food that they had raised and wine that they had made. And it was a lovely experience. So you'd get to that place, and then the next day you'd go out and just do a loop and come back to where you were. Well, it's pouring rain again. And I looked at Bert and Donna and I said, I'm not biking today. I'm going to sit in my room. I'm going to drink wine. I'm going to read a book, and I'm going to look out at the beautiful seascape, but I am not going out in the pouring rain to ride. And they're like, do what you want. We're going to ride. So they go out to ride, and I decide I'm going back down to get another cappuccino. And when I come out, Donna is sitting on the ground in the middle of the road. and it's rural. So there's, you know, it's not like there's any cars or anything. And I go over, I'm like, what's going on? And Donna is a no nonsense woman. She's a Harvard grad. She's a woodworker. She's a Renaissance woman. She's one of my favorite people on the planet. And she's no wimp. And she is like in so much pain. She's crying. She won't stand up. I'm like, oh shit, something is really wrong. Cause this is not my Donna. This is not how she would act. Ends up, we had to call an ambulance. We get her in the ambulance. The sirens are, you know, squealing across the Italian countryside. I go back in and I open my computer and like, it was like, mom, it was me. I'm like, what do you mean it was you? And he said, well, you know, when you guys were riding, so the company we took the trip with didn't gave us paper maps. They didn't give us GPS or anything. They gave us paper maps. Well, Donna, thank God she went to Harvard and is so brilliant because she could read the maps. I couldn't even figure the maps out. So Donna was in front, but she would program into her phone because the maps were getting all wet because of all the rain. She programmed into our phone our next destination. And so she would have to pull the phone out of her pocket and look at it. And she would swerve into the road. And probably 10 times a day before I'd be like, Donna, car, car, Donna. She'd swerve back to her side of the road. Rob goes, mom, one of you is going to die. Probably going to be Donna. But this trip was not going to end well. And he said, I had to take Donna out. And I'm like, well, why didn't you give her a flat tire? Why'd you have to break her leg in Italy? And he said, you know Bert and Donna, because they're both just badasses. He's like, you know Bert and Donna. He's like, a tire wouldn't have stopped her. A broken chain wouldn't have stopped her. They would have gone and gotten it repaired. He's like, it's going to rain the next 2 days. One of you guys was going to die. And this was, and I knew if Donna didn't ride, none of you would ride. And he was absolutely right. Because once that all happened, we had the tour company come pick up our bikes. You know, we took the train. Once Donna got out of the hospital, we took the train back to Rome. And, you know, then it was time to go home. And so he said, you know, I know from your perspective, you're looking at this as an unfortunate accident. But in reality, it was the best thing that could have happened to any of you. And I mean, my mind was just blown. My mind was blown. I was like, oh my gosh. And to me, the even bigger part of the story is that so often, you know, I think about when Chelsea died 30 years ago and how awful that was. But now 30 years later, I can see the beauty in that of her raising her hand to play that role in our family and in our lives. And so often we see these things that happen and we think, oh, that's awful. But if we could just take a step back and go, oh, just what Rob said, everything that happens to me happens for me. I might not see how this is going to serve me right now, but I have to trust that it is for my highest and best and that someday it will all make sense and I will understand how it does serve me and is for me. So that was a really in-your-face moment when I got that message loud and clear.
When this all started happening and over time, how did your family react, like your husband, your children?
Well, they didn't know a lot about it because anytime I would mention it, I'd go like, you know, we'd be communicating as a family, talking or whatever, and I'd go, oh, well, you know, yesterday Rob said, and it's like everybody would just kind of get quiet. Like, yeah, there goes mom again. So for a long time, I really quit sharing about it. And I really only shared it with a couple of my very close friends who, you know, were kind of spiritually aligned and believed the same things I did and didn't think I was off my rocker to be having these conversations with Rob. You know, now they're all supportive. You know, they've all, you know, they've all read the book. They're all, you know, supportive and proud of me. I don't think any of them have really tried to communicate with Rob themselves, which he, you know, kept saying to me. I've left all the personal messages out of the book. The book are the messages that he really wanted humanity to know about things from the other side. But in those, you know, he would like, let them know I'm here. They can talk to me anytime. I'm here. I'm here. And he's not giving me those messages so much anymore because I've shared that with them. And I just trust when they're ready, if they want to connect with Rob, they will. And, you know, we're all on our own journey. Again, I would have never guessed that I would be having this experience. I just would have never imagined that all of this would have happened. I'm so grateful it did. And I'm grateful now, like I said, yes to Rob about teaching the class and all of the things. But, you hear these people who, you know, come from a long line of psychic readers or clairvoyance and palm readers and all this stuff. I have none of that in my background. I'm just a regular old mom who just happened to have this amazing experience with my child.
And you get messages from Chelsea as well?
No, I mean, and in part because I haven't. So, yes, I have gotten some messages from her, but I haven't really connected with her because I got the information I needed through Rob and then through some touch points with her that, yeah, this was my role. I was happy to stand in it. It was me fulfilling my karma. Chelsea loves, she likened it to a high dive. She likes to go to the top, jump in, get back up, go to the ladder, go to the end, and jump off again. Like, she likes these short little lifetimes. That was, you know, her. So she was getting to fulfill what she wanted to do by, you know, holding that role in our family. But I haven't made any real distinct efforts to talk to Chelsea. And I kind of questioned myself on that for a little bit. But what I have found with working with the moms that I do in the Messages for Moms program is that some of them, they don't want what Rob and I have. They don't want to have daily conversations. Some of them just need to know, like, that their child's okay, that they didn't suffer, that, you know, they're still there with them. I mean, everybody has a different, I mean, and I didn't open my computer having any idea that this was where it was going to go, that there was going to be a book and, you know, a lifetime of conversations and all the things that have come out of it. But I think probably every soul that goes and the people that are left, you know, without the direct physical contact with them, they're, what's going to bring them healing is going to be different. And so what I needed to heal from Chelsea, I feel like I got 30 years ago in those white stones, and then her bringing all those white stones together for me about, this is, you know, this is my message to you: go out, overcome any obstacles, and create a life that you love living. And so, you know, I kind of got what I needed from Chelsea. Rob and I have a very different life, just like our relationships with people in physical bodies are different. I think our relationships with people in spirit are different. So Rob and I just have a different agenda, a different relationship, a different purpose for our connection than Chelsea and I did. So I don't really feel I have any uncompleted business with Chelsea, whereas I know Rob and I still have a lot to do. He's gonna have to listen to his mama on this one, and he's got to do it more at my pace than his.
And does he leave you rocks as well?
Oh, yes. So Rob, this is so fun. Rob leaves me heart rocks everywhere. I used to pick them all up. If you come in my house, it looks like a heart rock museum. So now I just kind of pick them up and set them on the side so that somebody else can see them and maybe pick them up and have a moment of happiness with it. He sends me hundreds and hundreds of heart rocks everywhere I go. I mean, so yeah, that's his sign, which I kind of crack up. I'm like, what are my kids trying to tell me? They both leave me rocks. It's like, maybe that I need to get grounded or something. But yeah, his sign to me is heart rocks.
Do you find his communication has changed over time, almost in a way that, because he's over the other side of the veil, he's becoming more kind of soulful? Unless Rob, in a way, I don't know if I'm saying it right, like a different kind of communication.
Yes, yes. Like in the book, there's a lot of swear words, and actually I took a lot of them out. But, you know, because, I mean, he was a cool 29-year-old dude, single, athlete, businessman. You know, he was just a cool dude, and he swore. And he talked about that, and we cut all of these out of the book, but there were so many times when he'd be talking, he'd go, he'd use a word and he'd be like, well, I've never used that word before. Don't know where that came from, you know? And then he'd be, and then he'd start saying, gosh, I feel like I'm communicating differently now. I would have never said it that way before. So it did start to change. So even in the beginning, it was just like his phrasing and his words started to shift. And now the manner in which he communicates with me is even different. I still, sometimes if I have something I really want clarity on, I'll pull out my computer and write it down. But now, you know, I can just have a thought and he'll chime in with an answer. And again, I often know it's him and not me because it's nothing I would have thought of. It just, if I had sat down to try to map out, you know, okay, what are the pros and cons of this situation? What are my options? I wouldn't have come up with that one. So, you know, that's how I kind of know it's Rob, even though it's coming in a different format than typing it at the computer. And, you know, I feel like he's kind of at this point becoming one of my guides. And he's like, and I never knew when people would say, oh, I asked my guides. I'm like, what do you mean you asked your guides? What is that? I still, if I'm honest, don't really know what that means. But I know what it means for me to have Rob going from just a child in spirit that I can connect with to somebody who is really giving me guidance in my life. And he's told me, he goes, Mom, one of the classes we're going to do after you've taken enough moms through the messages for moms is we're going to teach a class on how to help someone in spirit become your guide. I'm like, great, put that on the shelf, buddy. I don't know. It might be 2030 before we're there, but you keep that right there in your pocket. I'll still be here. I'm not ready yet, but we'll get there.
So do you feel it's becoming less of a mother-child relationship and it's like you're two adults working together?
Yeah, it felt that from the very beginning. In fact, in the very beginning, it was almost like he was the consoling parent because I was just so devastated. I'll tell you, Simon, I have never cried so much. I don't even remember after Chelsea's death crying like that. And I think part of it was I still had three young kids at home to take care of. Now all my kids are grown. You know, we don't have any kids at home. It was like, you know, how do I, you know, I just had so much more time to feel and grieve than I did when Chelsea passed. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it was a totally different experience. But in those early days, he just, you know, he was just so loving and tender. And he was a very sentimental, open-hearted guy. He really was. God, he would cry at movies. I mean, he had such a big heart, but he just really, I just felt so often like he just had his arms around me. He was just holding me, you know, just going, it's okay, Mom, it's going to be okay. You know, so yeah, it doesn't feel mother-son at all anymore. And it really didn't from the beginning. I did feel like some of his personality traits stayed, like his persistence, man. Oh my God. I remember when he wanted a Nintendo, man, he just wore us down to, we're like, give the kid a damn Nintendo so we can sleep, you know? And it was like when you're going to teach this class to moms, it was like, okay, Rob, I'll teach the class. You know, so I felt like some of his soul characteristics stayed with him for a while, but yeah, it changed immediately.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Beyond Grief, How a Son's Afterlife Connection Transformed a Mother's Loss into a Remarkable Spiritual Journey. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, they can.
And can you give us your website address?
Yes, it's www.kimhodous.com, KIMHODOUS.com.
Great. Fantastic. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Simon, thank you so much for the invitation. Thank you for your beautiful questions. And I know you really dug into the book and that means so much to me. It has really been an honor. Thank you so much for asking me to be with you and all of your listeners today. I really feel honored. Thank you.
Thank you. This week, I was talking to Kim Hodous about her book, Beyond Grief, How a Son's Afterlife Connection Transformed a Mother's Loss into a Remarkable Spiritual Journey. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended version of this episode. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions, and you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. You can become a patron by going patreon.com/rparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. My book on verified near-death experiences is out now on Amazon, and you can get it on paperback, audiobook, and Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.